Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach Season 4.
Yes.
Very exciting day. We are back officially.
Did you miss us?
This is Tux Lerzel.
This is Stephanie Domingo.
We be drinking and swearing.
Yeah.
As per usual.
Always.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we would like to acknowledge that. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Show enough.
I love a show enough.
Right? It just feels right.
Today we be drinking a fancy warm cocktail.
Kind of weird, but yeah. I'm going with it because I trust you.
Yes.
Options are limited when it comes to the era of like 1700s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Stephanie's story today comes from the colonial era.
Yes.
When
pre-colonial, actually.
Pre-colonial.
Yeah.
Ooh la la.
Yes.
We were still, well, I guess we weren't even a collection of British colonies yet.
We were there, but okay. We weren't fully expanded. Yeah. So
okay.
I guess colonial.
Okay.
Colonial. Yeah.
Yeah. And the problem is when I'm trying to pick a cocktail, anything before the mid 1800s, there just aren't really a lot of options. We weren't really drinking many mixed drinks before the mid 1800s. There were a few. We've had a sangaree. We've had a sherry cobbler.
Oh, sangaree.
What is that? Like episode 2. I feel like I want to visit some of those really older ones. I definitely want to try a sangaree again. But so other than those really big ones that everyone sort of knows, well, everyone meaning me.
Yes.
And like cocktail historians. There aren't a ton of options, so most people were drinking their spirits straight,
yes.
Or they might mix them with a bit of water, or they were drinking beer or wine, which is great, but it doesn't really give me a whole lot of options for like a fun recipe to share. People were drinking a lot of punches still at this point, but a lot of the punch recipes that were really big back then had some kind of like exotic ingredients or things that are really labor intensive. You have to sort of prepare in advance, and I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
I think eventually I will.
What do you mean exotic?
Well, so when I'm more the like the labor intensive things, there's something called like oleosaccharum or something.
Oh, yeah. You told me about this once.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly how it's made, but it's basically like you mix lemon zest and sugar and kind of let it like ferment or something.
Yeah.
And it takes a little while and you have to make a bunch of it.
Yeah,
it's not something you can really.
Fermented lemon juice.
Yeah. I think it's the.
Oh, the rind or something?
Rind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the oils from
and
it.
And I guess the idea is that it keeps well and citrus was hard to come by.
Mm.
So you could make it in advance and have it when citrus wasn't in season. But it's just like you can't really make a small batch. And for just the two of us, I just haven't. Someday I will.
Yeah. We'll put the process on Patreon or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And then once we have it, I guess we have it forever.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Someday I'll get there. But anyways, today we are drinking something that I found from the book Imbibe by David Wondrich. He has this book on cocktail history, and there are a few sort of hidden gems in this book, that things that we haven't made yet. So that's how I found this recipe. It still feels very much like summer right now. I am, in fact, sweating because I'm wearing a polyester shirt. Not polyester, but what
it's
did you call it?
Micromodal.
Okay, that.
Yeah, it's a mix. Cotton is really expensive right now. There are shortages because of China's climate change that they created.
Yeah.
And unleashed on the world. So it's...
It's a hoax.
It's a hoax. Yeah, it's just a fabric that they mix in with cotton for a better hand feel.
Okay. Well, I'm sweating because of whatever this is. And because it's very summery outside, even though it is September when this episode comes out, it is September. Fall is right around the corner. This cocktail feels...
I'm not ready.
I know. This cocktail feels very much more like a fall or winter drink, but...
Anything hot feels wintry.
Yeah. But I had such a hard time finding something that would be appropriate. We're just going to go for it.
Yeah.
Today we are drinking the apple toddy. This was a real treat in cold weather, especially around the holidays in sort of pre-colonial America, colonial America, all the way up through Prohibition. This was popular, really. It didn't matter if you were a poor farmer, a soldier, a politician, or a wealthy landowner. This drink was popular across the social scale, especially around the holidays.
A drink of the people.
Yes, exactly. It appears in print a bunch of times, both in the 1700s and 1800s. Unfortunately, like a lot of pre-Prohibition classics, it never really found its way back to popularity after Prohibition was repealed. So I think it's time for us to take a taste and see if it deserves a comeback.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Ooh. Oh, God.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Did I just spill this?
Did it get in your room?
No, it's okay. Fine. I have a little notepad because Tux is going to be helping me out with my scandal. I haven't told him how, but I didn't get the notepad, okay, so we're good. Let's take a sippy sip.
Oh.
Ooh. That's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so this does deserve a comeback. It's good. Definitely more of a winter drink. It's
definitely
it's
a winter drink, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
I think it's better than a regular toddy.
Yeah. This drink, the apple toddy, is made with sugar, hot water, apple brandy, and half of a baked apple. You want to choose sort of a small, soft, sweet baking apple, something like a Macintosh or a Cortland that is going to kind of fall apart when you bake it. You don't want anything with too much texture because the whole idea is that after you bake it, you kind of mash it up and stir it into the drink and it sort of just kind of comes apart and is like, it's like drinking apple pie.
It's really, really nice.
A lot of the recipes that I saw, there's people that are online saying like, oh, we're trying this recipe from the past. And a lot of people were saying that you should kind of mix it up and then strain it out to get any of the bigger chunks of apple. What I did was, the recipe did not say to do this, but I used an immersion blender to really mash it all up. I'm kind of thinking they wouldn't have done that obviously in the 1700s, but I think they must have had some kind of like specialty tools to really make sure it was mashed up properly.
Yeah, or they prepared the apple in a way that just made it mushy.
Exactly, yeah. So we didn't strain it out. We did it sort of the old fashioned way, even though I did use an immersion blender. I don't think it needs to be strained, but I do think it needs to be really well mixed.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like if you want to go for a sort of easier way to make this, rather than baking an apple and mashing it up, you could just use some applesauce.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. As long as you get like an unsweetened applesauce, I don't see any reason not to use applesauce. Maybe like a half a cup or like a quarter of a cup of applesauce mixed into the drink. Don't tell Reddit I said that because Cocktail Reddit would probably roast my ass.
The day would come for you.
For not doing it authentically.
Yeah. Oh my God. They'd be so upset. I love it. Yeah. Actually.
So this is, yeah. I'm happy with this. Okay.
So I guess I get to go into my scandal now. So I am talking about George Washington today.
Ooh la la.
Yes. So whenever we are talking about George Washington, we are definitely like serving the girls' fantasy. We are out here telling the children that this man never told a lie. Like, oh, that fucking makes sense in any way. Like, he wasn't able to tell a lie, so everyone else tells lies on his behalf, it seems.
Exactly.
But he was the first, so he was always going to be made mythological in some way. But the truth is that Washington was a legend who changed the course of modern history, because few people can say that they personally started a war with their bumbling, greedy ass.
Oh, ooh, going right in for this. I'm excited.
Going right in, yes. So my scandal today is the Jumonville affair.
Ooh la la.
Yes. It's very French. Yes. L'affaire Jumonville. So I know that you are studying French and you've been speaking French. So you're gonna be reading all the French words today.
Okay. audience participation.
Yes. Okay. I'm like, this is gonna be fun for everyone. So the war that Washington sparked, it kicked off the French and Indian War. The war that would cascade abroad into the Seven Years' War.
Wow. Okay.
And it would see fighting on every inhabited continent except for Australia. Like, everywhere was fighting.
What?
Yes, correct. It's a war that we don't talk much about because it happened a generation before the Revolution, but it set the ball in motion for the Revolution. I can't do a deep dive into this world war or any world war in 45 minutes, so I'm only talking about Washington's cock-up.
Yeah.
But first, a quick toast.
Yes.
Let us raise our glasses. Hi. Cheers to the first George W. Doing what George W.'s do.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers. You always have the best toasts. You put me to shame.
Okay. So a little background on who besides the indigenous were on Turtle Island in the 1700s. The French Empire occupied Ohio, the Ohio and the Mississippi River valleys, the Great Lakes, and just basically all of North America. they called the region New France or...
A Nouvelle France.
Ooh, Nouvelle France. I'm going to show you a map just so you're aware of the territory that we're...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Almost sort of looks like the Louisiana Territory, but much, but also includes like New England and like the Great Lakes. Yeah.
Exactly. A really big chunk of land. But the French had been in North America, what we call North America, since the 1500s.
Wow.
Okay. In that area. And get this, these cheese-eating motherfuckers had excellent relationships with indigenous people.
Oh my God.
Instantly.
Of course they did.
Because, and I'm glad you're seated for this, because they didn't try to change them or civilize them.
Oh my God, I can't.
I.e. genocide them. They were fine with their customs. They learned, they actually learned their many different languages. They were just about that money, that fur trading money. They discovered that they could come to North America and just buy a whole bunch of furs using just European wares. And every winter or whenever the weather got bad, they can go back to France with ships full of really expensive fur.
Okay.
And make all of the money.
They weren't trying to like colonize. They were just here to like extract and go away.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they had this good thing going and they wanted to keep it that way. As a result, New France or...
Nouvelle France was
barred for anyone who was not indigenous or not French. The whole area was, they weren't allowed to be in that region if you were like a Dutch colonist.
Okay.
You weren't allowed there.
Huh, okay.
Because they were trying to protect their fur monopoly that they had.
Sure, okay.
And this fur monopoly, it provided a steady source of money for a cash-strapped France. Because they were, you know, they were playing that empire game in other places and they just needed money.
Yeah.
And they were able to make it with the indigenous tribes.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, they were definitely colonial.
Oh, 100%.
Not here.
Yeah, not here. And they weren't really trying to steal land like the British and the Dutch were.
But just here.
Yeah. They
were stealing land.
They were
elsewhere.
Oh, one... I know so much about this because they had good relationships. Like they worked with the tribes and they're like, okay, this land is yours. You guys need to hunt there. Like, where can we be?
Huh.
Yeah. Which is still fucked up because it's like, why are you even here?
I mean, it's much better than what happened after.
Oh, yeah. And the French, more than any other European nation, this is fully removed from my outline, but they married a lot of the indigenous people.
Oh.
And there's a whole separate tribe in Canada called the Métis. It's like the biggest tribe of First Nations people because so many of them intermarried because they learned the language, they learned the customs. Again, they weren't trying to change them. So they were able to have this kind of new, like a hybrid kind of situation where they developed their own language.
Oh, this makes me really upset.
Like, yeah.
We could have shared it.
We could have, yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah, so the French had loosely claimed the Ohio country. The Ohio country is kind of roughly area like below the Great Lakes to the Allegheny like mountains, like down to the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. It was a big area.
Okay.
But the French had loosely just like said, like, this is where we're going to be.
Okay.
But here come the British saying, like, we just made a deal with the Iroquois that said that this land is ours.
The Iroquois didn't have anything to do with that.
It's very complicated. There are a lot of different tribes underneath the umbrella of the Iroquois.
Sure.
So who knows? It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay.
There were a few British colonies with their eyes on this new region, but it was really the colonial Virginia leadership that was doing the most to expand their territory. Pennsylvania, too, wanted the Ohio country. But the royal governor of colonial Virginia, a man named Robert Dinwiddie.
I'm like, Dinwiddie?
That, yes. I'm like, is this real?
Yeah. I'm being punked.
In 1716, he led an expedition across the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, claiming the territory for Britain and for Virginia, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know who told him he could do such a thing.
He's white. He doesn't need anyone to tell him. He just
He's a straight
what he wants.
White man.
Yeah.
They have nothing but the audacity.
Exactly.
So the governor believed that Western settlements could protect the colony from both native attacks and just French expansion.
Okay.
British landowners also wanted more white people in the area to create a buffer between their plantations because they had a fear that their enslaved people were going to run off and just like hide in the mountains and start communities themselves off to themselves, not bothering anyone, or even worse, join up with the natives.
Oh dear, we can't have that.
To enact retribution. And it's like, retribution for what though? Why?
Yeah, what?
What? I don't understand. Help me understand.
Je ne comprends pas.
Yes. Amazing. So colonial officials in Virginia began issuing land grants to indentured people to move into this area that they call the Virginia backcountry, which is modern day West Virginia and kind of like the bottom corner of Pennsylvania too. So they're just like, we just need more bodies in this area. But you can't just be giving away land to the poor. You also have to give some to the wealthy.
Yes.
It's a law.
That's the them's the rules.
Them's the rules.
We didn't make the rules, but we sure do follow them.
Yeah. So in 1749, Virginia's Ohio Company, it was a land speculation company, they received a grant from London of 500,000 acres in the upper Ohio River Valley.
Just a little bit.
Just a little. Yeah, the plan was to build fortified settlements that they would sell to the colonists.
Gross. Okay.
So this is where a wealthy 17-year-old George W. comes on the scene. He joined up with the Ohio Company as a land surveyor, but would end up dabbling in speculation.
Surprise.
Yeah, as one does. Wow. After 3 years, he probably did, it's estimated, about 200 different surveys.
Okay.
And he also bought land, too.
Mm-hmm. Of course he
did. At a heavily discounted, like, bought is in quotes, air quotes. It's like, yeah, this is $1 for this. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is mine. So he...
I set the price, so...
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Oh, so he'd end up buying a bunch of land and making himself a pretty penny, reselling it. Mm-hmm. So he was making a really good living, but he decided to join the Virginia militia after his brother died.
Okay.
His brother was a military man and he died suddenly. And so kind of like in his honor, he decided that, yeah, I know, your face is priceless.
You can't hear my face. Just scrunched up.
Like, your face is like, huh? Yeah. So he decides that he's going to be a military officer, even though he has, you know, no experience. So he was appointed commander of one of four militia districts in Virginia just because he had like a commanding way about him, which I think is code for rich.
Yes.
you're like, yes.
Full of the audacity.
Full of the audacity. They're like, you, sir, are the one to lead these young men, mm-hmm. even though you yourself are seven. Well, I guess he's 20 at this point.
Okay.
A child. But this is during a time when the British and the French were really starting to push up against each other, like territorially.
Okay.
East Side was in a race to build up more forts along the Ohio River,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of claim the whole valley. Who knew Ohio was such a prize? Even though the French had been in the region now for centuries, their population was only about 60,000 French colonists, in that whole area.
Okay.
Compared,
it's a huge area, too. 60,000.
It is a huge area. But compared to the British had about 2 million people in their little 13 colonies.
Wow.
So
already 2 million people.
Already 2 million people. So the outnumbered French, they relied very heavily on their relationships with indigenous tribes to counter this influx of British, like new British subjects, like people coming in from Scotland, Ireland, the north of England. Huh. You know, the like, it's just, you know, conquest of the British Empire. So all these new people are pouring into the colonies like it's the club. And
then trying to like move west when they're not supposed to.
Yes. Okay. I mean, any kind of immigration, even before this country was a country, was not well received.
Okay.
Like these new people, people from Scotland, people from Ireland. I read a lot of accounts that called them like rowdy, that they were causing trouble.
Yeah.
Because there was limited land, stolen land and jobs.
Yeah.
So colonial officials, they decided that like, oh, we're going to send these new people to the frontier.
Sure.
To fight the natives for us. It's like, I hate you, but not enough not to use your body to protect the stolen land that I have.
Yeah. Okay.
But it turns out human shields was not enough. You needed forts because this was during a time when native tribes were extremely dominant.
Sure.
It was not a game. They were fighting for everything they had. So.
Well, yeah. I mean... Literally.
So in 1753, in response to a rise in French fort activity on the Ohio River and in that valley, Governor Dinwiddie, he started scheming on how he could just low-key steal the land in that area. But he needed to know about the French. So he tapped GW for a special diplomatic mission. he knew that GW, I'm not going to call him George.
Yeah.
George W.
Yeah,
he knew that George W. had done some surveys in the region and also had financial stakes in the region because he himself was one of the chief stakeholders with the Ohio company.
Of course.
Surprise! Of
course. Yes.
I'm going to give you a moment to be gooped and gasped.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
I know.
I wish that I were.
Yeah. So that winter, now a 21-year-old sturdy GW started his journey as a special envoy for the governor. He was sent by Dinwiddie on behalf of the crown officially, but also on behalf of their future pocketbooks full of coin to meet up with the French at Fort
Leboeuf.
Leboeuf. Kind of like Shia. I think yes. Shia's Leboeuf.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
I think. Yeah, so he was told to go to this fort to essentially ask the French to abandon their posts.
Like, hey, do you want to leave, please?
Yeah. Did you ever just think about leaving? So W was tasked to make peace also with the Iroquois Confederacy and to gather more dirt on the French, like via them. He would meet an Iroquois leader to help him with this, a man named Tanaka Garrison, or Tanaka Garrison. I've seen different spellings of his name. I'm sure I'm butchering his name. He was the Iroquois leader, air quotes around leader, who the British conveniently called Half King.
Okay.
Half King of what? Who really knows? But the British did this very often, just kind of inflating some dude that they were kind of fucking with to be like, oh, he's the speaker for his people.
Uh-huh. Find the one that's going to like do what you want and then just act like he's
a king.
Ruler. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So in any case, like this Half King, he would help GW with this mission of just like spying on the French and just providing extra like manpower. So Tanaka Garrison, they had a really good relationship in the beginning.
Okay.
But he would later give W the nickname Devourer of Villages.
I've heard that, like, even once we were, like, an actual country, that he was still called that. A lot of Indian nations.
Yeah, it was a common term that they said.
Yeah.
And something that I learned through my research is that his grandfather, John Washington, was also called this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Great-grandfather, I'm sorry. Like,
so this is a family, it's a family affair.
Yes, it's a family affair. L'affaire.
Affaire de famille.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. Yes, sounds so sexy. Yeah, it's legacy. So W's journey took him north of Virginia to the fork in the Ohio River. From there, he continued north along the Allegheny to Fort Leboeuf. when he passed this river junction in modern day Pittsburgh, he was so impressed with the layout, with the land. He felt like it was really a strategic place. Like he wanted to put a fort there.
Okay.
So he took notes in his journal and I'll put them in the show notes there. He had beautiful handwriting and he also penned some maps that are really, really detailed. And
GW?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really lovely. So I'm going to put them in the show notes. So after his party like inspected this site, they moved on to a town called Logstown. It was a Native American settlement about like 16 miles outside of Pittsburgh. That's where Tanaka Garrison lived with his people.
Okay.
So W was invited to this tribal council to just learn more about the French in that area from the tribe's people.
Okay.
And after that, he decided that, okay, it's time to go to the French now. Mm-hmm. He's really going to Fort Leboeuf. So he's received warmly by the French. They invite him in. They give him and all of his men, including the native men, like dinner. They drink wine together. And then GW, he delivered the governor's message, his letter to the dude in charge, a man named...
Commandant Jacques Le Gardeur de Saint-Pierre.
Ooh, Le Gardeur. Yes. So he passed the message from the governor to him and it essentially said like, hey, leave. He declined.
Imagine. He's like, no thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
He politely told Karen that if he wanted to speak to the manager, that the letter that he was carrying should have been addressed appropriately to like his commanding officer. And he's just like, I'm not going to leave my post for you.
Who
Duh.
The fuck are you?
I know.
Literally.
The audacity.
The fuck out of here.
Yeah. He was polite about it. He's just like, I'm not, I have no intention of leaving, I think is what he said. So, you know, the Virginians and the native people with them, they're on their way. But the French actually give them supplies for their trip back home.
Fuck off. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Fuck off and die.
They're a little more polite than fuck off and die. They're just like, I'm not doing what you're saying, but like, I wish you well and goodbye. Hopefully I'll never see you again.
Bonne chance.
Bonne chance, yes. Bonne chance. So it's the spring when W finally gets back to Dinwiddie. It like gives him the bad news that he's not the boss of France. However, the trip wasn't a complete bust because he was able to get like valuable information about French movement from the loose-lipped, like drunken French.
Okay.
That they too were planning to build a fort at that like fork in the river.
In Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Okay. My drink is just about empty. This is like...
I haven't been drinking enough, so I'm going to take a break just to drink some.
Yeah.
It is delightful.
It's so good. All right, let's go make another one. BRB.
Hey, this is Brandon from Peculiar Picture Show, the podcast that talks about movies, maladies, and mental health.
And this is Maria, also from that podcast.
So we were wondering, do you like movies? Do you like mental health?
Oh boy, do I ever, Brandon.
Well then, I've got a podcast for you. Peculiar Picture Show is the podcast for you because it is about movies and mental health.
That's right. We use movies to talk about mental health issues like borderline personality disorder, social issues like systemic racism, and other things.
Like how bad Shakespeare in Love was.
Yeah, sometimes we just talk about how bad the movie is.
And we really talked about that one. But sometimes we have games. Maria used to be a teacher, and so she loves to quiz people.
I really do.
So check us out online at peculiarpicture.show. That's our website, and you can stream all episodes there.
Or you can find us on any major podcast channel.
This drink is so fucking good. I know.
All right, we're back.
So after listening to GW's report on what he gleaned from the French over some wine, over some vin.
Maybe an apple toddy.
Oh, maybe an apple toddy, yes. Well, I think this feels very American.
This is also probably
very like British.
Pre Johnny Appleseed too. So there weren't just apples all over the place yet.
That's right.
Yeah, you guys, if you haven't listened to that episode, it's so much fun.
Oh my God.
About it's Johnny Appleseed so good. And Davy Crockett. Yeah.
Johnny Appleseed, that shit like blew my head out of the back of my skull. Like it was wild.
Yeah,
we
wouldn't have had many apples here. I think they're native to like Kazakhstan or something, apples originally.
What?
Yeah, they're not native to North America at all.
That's amazing, but how did we get them?
I mean.
Conquest.
Yeah.
Fuck shit, as I like to call it. So Dinwiddie immediately dispatched a group of colonial soldiers to that area at the Fork of the Winter. The Fork in the Winter.
I prefer a spoon in the fall.
Yes. To the fork in the river, telling them to just immediately start construction on a fort. Like,
okay,
just get it done. However, before these men could finish, the French just drove them off their land. And they would finish what the British started. Using their foundation, they would create Fort...
I don't know how to pronounce that. Duquesne? I feel like I'm supposed to be an expert.
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Duquesne.
Something like that.
Fort something or another.
Yeah. Fort Francie Pants.
They would build this giant fort called Fort Francie Pants. at the same time, a newly commissioned lieutenant... George W. because Ooh. He got a promotion for mm-hmm. his information on the French. And now he gets two groups of soldiers at his command.
Oh, what a guy. He sounds so sturdy.
He was sturdy. How did you be knowing? He sent on another diplomatic mission and he leads these forces to where he thinks there's going to be this fort that's in construction at the fork in the river. And on his way, he passed the militiamen who had to flee.
Okay.
The French. And they told him, like, hey, you know, they came, they rolled up on us. There were too many of them. So we just left. Like, no one died. It was completely peaceful. So when W hears this, he's like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm still going there. That's our fort.
Because I said so.
So he was going to continue on to meet the French. And he would ask Tanish Harrison to bring his men with him. It's like, don't involve them.
I mean,
come on.
He needed those extra bodies to carry all that audacity.
Yeah, you're right. Audacity is heavy. It is their burden to bear.
The white man's audacity. They're just carrying it around.
Oh, my God. What does that even look like? Everyone just has, like, the biggest backpack you've ever seen. Yeah. It is worth noting that this diplomatic mission that GW is supposed to be on was not supposed to be violent. Like, he was not allowed to use any force unless the French decided that they wanted to be about that life.
Okay.
Like, they were supposed to be acting defensively.
Okay.
Because they weren't at war, these two nations.
Sure, yeah.
So, not yet, at least. Yet. Yeah. So on the morning of May 28th, 1754, GW and his troops ambushed a small French diplomatic mission led by Joseph
Coulon de Vieille, Sieur de Jumonville.
Ooh, Jumonville. Yeah. Oh, I've been fucking up this the whole time. So it's the Jumonville affair.
Ah.
Ah, okay.
How were you saying it?
Jumonville.
Oh, Jumonville.
Oh, Jumonville. See, this is... This is why I have you. Yes. This is great. Jumonville. Okay. This incident would be called the Jumonville affair, l'affaire Jumonville.
Mm-hmm.
It was called an affair and not a war or even a battle because it only lasted 15 minutes.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yes. Oh, dear is right.
Because it was an ambush.
It was an ambush, yes. And exactly what happened has been a subject of controversy and debate since it happened. Jumonville was killed, possibly executed by either GW or Tennis Harrison.
Wow.
But the French accounts and the British accounts differ wildly. And I say accounts because both sides had multiple people and none of them were saying the same thing.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm sure it was just chaos.
Yeah, it's chaos and it happened so fast. 15 minutes and it's done.
Yeah. And it also happened 500 years ago.
Yeah, eons ago, essentially. So the few primary accounts agree on a number of facts, but also disagree wildly on a number of other facts. They agree that the battle lasted 15 minutes, during which Jumonville was murked, and most of his party were either killed or taken prisoner. Those are the facts.
So much for, like, not using any violence.
Right. Yeah.
Come on, G-Dub.
So G-Dub, he himself was hazy on what happened.
Oh, I just can't remember.
He just can't remember, you know? In his journals that were confiscated, and I will get into that in a moment, his accounts of the affair, because he was asked, because he was the one in charge, he was asked multiple times, all of the versions of what he said, they're consistent, but the details are compressed, according to a historian named Fred Anderson, with the intent to obscure post-battle atrocities.
Sure.
You don't say.
So he's like, dear diary, the mean old French attacked me and all I did was defend myself.
There's lots of dot, dot, dots instead of information. So he wrote in his diary, we were advanced pretty near to them, dot, 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 when they discovered us, dot, 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 whereupon I ordered my company to fire, dot, 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 company, dot, 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 received the whole fire of the French during the greatest part of the action, which only lasted a quarter of an hour before the enemy was routed, we killed Mr. de Jumonville, the commander, dot, 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 also 9 others, dot, dot, dot. We wounded 1 and made 21 prisoners.
So he's redacting his own journal entry? What are you doing?
Mess.
Oh my God.
According to the French, GW and company, they attacked a peaceful diplomatic mission when they were eating breakfast. Because it was early in the morning and
petit
killed...
Petit déjeuner.
Yes. They were eating beef.
Yes.
That's beef. All of my French I know... Well, I did study French.
Shia the beef.
Oh. Wow. That's hilarious. All of my recent French knowledge has come from the... God, what is that show on HBO? They have that French song.
Oh.
La Fafa.
A Flight of the Conchords.
Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
Yes. Boof. Flight of the Conchords is really funny. Check it out. It's so funny.
It definitely feels like a period piece at this point. Because it's like,
yes.
It was happening at the exact same time that
we
moved
were living
to
there. Yeah. It was so just wild to see. I know every inch of the blocks that they were filming on.
And they look nothing like that anymore. Those
I know,
areas. Yeah.
I know. Oh, and them, too.
Oh,
like grade? Age?
I mean, same.
Yeah. So they were having breakfast and just, like, killed and took them all prisoner. But one soldier managed to escape and make it to a nearby fort and just, like, tell his tale, which was great because he, like, alerted everyone. But it was bad because he ran so fast he didn't see Jumonville be killed.
Oh, so he didn't know...
he knew that shit was going left.
Sure.
And he wanted to survive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he ran. But this is one of the accounts that were based on eyewitnesses. There were two accounts. They used his account, which is kind of helpful. It basically said that GW and his men ambushed them and he ran.
Yeah.
He didn't see who killed his commander.
Okay.
And the other testimony came from an Indian man who was one of Tanisharison's camp.
Okay.
Testified for the French.
Oh.
Yeah. This man said, and this is a quote, "Mr. de Jumonville was killed by a musket shot in the head whilst they were reading the summons." This same native man claimed that he and the rest of the Iroquois rushed in to prevent the British from killing even more people.
Wow.
So his story, it backs up the French story that it was a diplomatic mission. They weren't mm-hmm. lying in wait.
Yeah, they weren't like all ready to attack.
They're yeah, they weren't trying croissant. To start a world war. They were just doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Trying to eat breakfast.
They just wanted them crepes.
Yeah, they were having some croissant, a jus d'orange.
Ah, jus d'orange, yes. I think I showed you that TikTok video of someone calling croissants croissants.
Oh my fucking God. I mean, people say voila instead of voila. It drives me crazy. Yeah.
And but like, that's subtle. But croissants? Come now.
Well, we're also out here in these streets saying bone apple tea instead of bon appetit. People literally write out the words bone apple tea.
What?
Yes.
Who are these people writing it out and why? Bone apple tea?
Yes.
Oh my God. You guys. I don't even know how to feel right now. Okay. I'm gonna try my best to move on. Bone apple tea. Not at war. Okay, so according to the British, GW was busy handling the French prisoners when Tanisharison approached Jumonville and struck him repeatedly in the head with a hatchet. Which is a very strong opening move. Like, why would he do that? Aren't you in command? But that's what the British were saying. One account by a British soldier added that as Jumonville lay wounded after the battle, Tanisharison approached him and said,
"Tu n'es pas encore mort, mon père?"
Yes, which is, "You are not dead yet, my father."
Yeah.
And then lifted his tomahawk. This is
oh, let me finish the job.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then lifted his tomahawk and planted the blade in Jumonville's skull. This is a quote. "He then took his brains and washed his hands with them and then scalped him."
What?
Yeah. So this account came from a guy in GW's regiment who wasn't even there. He had heard this from people who were there, which is very sus. Like, why didn't these people who were there give an account of what actually happened? Why didn't they go on record? Anyways, it's curious. It feels like a lie. And also, wouldn't it be easier to scalp someone if their brain was still in their head? You're going to take the brains out, wash your hands with them, and then scalp them?
I feel like the order of operations is mixed up here.
Yeah, however, this is the story that colonial papers and British papers ran with.
Of course it is.
This is the story that's most referenced in history books. Mm-hmm. This is the story that's most referenced in articles. And it seems to be lies. So centuries later, it's still not clear who is to blame for this bloody, you know, incident that happened so quickly. The French cried murder. The British cried self-defense because they did have weapons on them.
Sure. They're in the middle of nowhere.
Correct. But that was part of their argument. It's like, why they gotta have weapons, huh? And it's like, but you have weapons everywhere you go.
You literally, you wouldn't be caught out here in these streets without weapons.
Thank you. So W's company, he did lose one man in the battle. I mean, if you can call it a battle. But there's rumors that it was friendly fire.
Oh, my God.
It's a mess. So had the French been planning to attack the British? Who knows? Had GW opened fire to protect what he thought was his? Who knows? Was he manipulated by Tanisharison? Which a lot of, this is the most popular story on the internet, that poor young GW was outmaneuvered by a cunning older man with his own agenda. It's like, haven't we heard this before with the GW?
Oh my fucking God.
Yeah. To say nothing of your greedy ass agenda.
And like, those sneaky Native Americans mm-hmm. are really like, they're out to get the British to be in control so that they can lose their entire country.
Yeah.
that it checks out.
They're playing that 3D chess that I hear so much about. So according to Governor Dinwiddie, he, of course, blamed the Native allies for starting the whole thing, telling his superiors back in London, "This little skirmish was done by the half-king and his Indians, We were as auxiliaries to them. Okay. I'm inclined to disbelieve anything that man said. It feels like lies.
It's complete bullshit.
Yeah. Like it doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't. If he just didn't want to take responsibility for his fuck up.
Correct. Yeah. Because he's the one who ordered him on this mission.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be diplomatic. So he's just like, oh yeah, no, the Indians, because they had a grievance against the French. And it's like...
And then to say that you're like, oh, we were just auxiliaries for them. Like, you wouldn't have said that if things had gone well.
Not at all. So back to GW, the bodies of these 10 French soldiers, some of whom, in the reports, again, everything is so fuzzy. Some of whom were scalped. I don't know if they all were scalped. They were just left where they fell, basically. Sure. Because there was word that the French were coming.
Yeah.
The one dude who got away, the sprinter, he told his friends, he told the French, and like they were coming for him and his group of men. So a mixed force of 700 French and native peoples were marching towards the now 200 Virginians plus, actually the natives got out of Dodge after this happened. They're just bye.
Yeah, I would do the same.
Yeah, so the British, they retreated to a position that is referred to as the Great Meadows, and immediately just start building a barricade of some sort because they're like, shit's about to hit the fan. I mean, shit already hit the fan. We need some sort of protection from what's coming for us. W names it Fort Necessity, which is so cute. So there, his small outnumbered soldiers, they waited for the French in the rain. And to make matters even worse, the guy commanding the French soldiers was the brother of Jumonville.
Oh.
So he done fucked up. So the combination of GW's raggedy command, the fact that his native allies were just like, bye, they were in the wind. It was raining, so there was wet gunpowder, and they had this rickety structure to begin with. They couldn't even hold the French off for the night. They gave up almost instantly.
Wow.
Yeah. In order to surrender... I have a quote from GW, which is very self-serving.
Imagine that.
Right? He wrote, "We continued this unequal fight with an enemy sheltered behind trees, ourselves without shelter in the trenches full of water, and the enemy galling us on all sides incessantly from the woods until 8 o'clock at night."
Bitch, you started this.
You started this. Don't start none. There won't be none.
Yeah.
You have no one to blame but yourself. The battle ended when the French offered to discuss terms of his surrender, and Washington accepted. His soldiers were then allowed to retreat back to, you know, where they came from. The French burned down Fort Necessity and all of the British forts in the area. As was customary, W had to sign an official document of surrender. It was all in French, a language that he could not read or write.
Okay.
He signed it anyways.
Yeah.
His dumb ass signed it. So he... The document said that he admitted to assassinating Jumonville.
Wow.
In cold blood. And he signed it. So to his deathbed, he would say that his translator fucked him over, basically. Mistranslating assassinated for the word loss, like switching them out.
I lost him? Where?
Yeah. Where'd he go? Where'd he go?
What?
But again, it's like, this is your man. This is not someone who was provided by the French. Like, nothing is his fault. Anyways. So the signed document, along with W's journals, which were seized at Fort Necessity, were sent back to France. And of course, like, shit blew up.
Yeah.
Like, it became a huge scandal. There was a public outrage. The French, they used the whole incident as, like, propaganda for the war. They're just like, the British attacked us for no reason. We were at peace until they started some shit with us. They were the instigators. Meanwhile, the British, they just moved on. As is their way, I guess. They carried on, but, like, they didn't care. As a result, GW was able to continue to fail upwards, even though his actions triggered the First World War, the first global war, and its debt would set the stage for the American Revolution, when colonists learned that they had to pay for nice things that they desired, like free stolen land. So we can thank W for that, too. His greedy ways triggered the course of events that would destroy one British empire in North America, but create another in India. Which is its whole other thing.
Wow.
Yeah. GW was legendary, but just not in the ways that we learned about in school. The end.
Wow. That was incredible. Thank you. Holy cow.
Right.
What a fucking...
Mess.
Mess, literally.
Yeah, what is the French word for mess? Or garbage?
Yeah. I can't think. I'm drunk. Leave me alone.
I'm sorry.
I almost said the word for trash can, which is incorrect. I love it. That was...
Like, did you remember? We didn't learn this shit in school, right?
Good Lord, no. Right? I've never heard any of this at all. Like, at all. He's a military genius.
Yes. Just so good at strategy. Meanwhile, you're out here blaming native peoples for your fuck up.
Well, thank you for that story. I guess our drinks are empty. Mine is certainly gone. So I guess that means we're done. America's history is juicy. We just add Applejack and some mashed up baked apples.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lerzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
And thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound
merci
engineer.
Beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup. Editor, sound engineer, and podfather.
It's merci beaucoups, okay? Yes.
Mercy buckets. and I do also just want to mention, you might be noticing that Stephanie told her story and there is not another one
like,
coming.
And we're like, bye!
Bye! we're changing up our format a little bit. I will be back in 2 weeks with my story for September. And we will be back in 1 week with a mini-sode sort of explaining why this is happening and what's going on.
It's exciting.
Yes, very Prepare exciting yourself. Things. All right, see you next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.